Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Hi there, thank you for joining us. Well, all around the world today, many churches in the Anglican and Catholic tradition have been celebrating the beatification of John Henry Newman, the 19th century Anglican priest turned cardinal and ultimately elevated this week to the status of blessed. The ceremony was conducted by Pope Benedict XVI in the English city of Birmingham, a city that Newman called home for much of his life. Like Mary MacKillop, who will be canonised a saint in just a few weeks' time, Newman will now have to pass the miracle test. And upon that, we will wait. Many others today marked another small miracle on the path to reconciliation as Pope Benedict gave his most direct apology yet for the abuse crisis still tearing at the heart of the Church. His words are still for some insufficient, as real repentance for them can only come with structural reformation of the institution, actions rather than words. A call made by many, and increasingly by priests, one of whom will join us later this evening in our second hour. First up, though, another difficult path on the road to reconciliation. Here in Australia, you may have heard in the news, if you're listening, the ACT Chief Minister lamenting the treatment of the territories by federal government. Well, this week, a delegation from the World Council of Churches is visiting Aboriginal communities in the Northern Territory to assess the impact of the federal government's emergency intervention, initiated by the Howard government and continued under Labor. Most controversially, the intervention suspended parts of the Racial Discrimination Act to permit the quarantining of incomes of people in communities deemed to be disadvantaged. Faced with mounting opposition, the Labor government are considering widening the provisions beyond Indigenous communities to avoid accusations of racial discrimination. The World Council of Churches visit is at the invitation of the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Ecumenical Commission of the National Council of Churches of Australia. It's part of a process leading up to the International Ecumenical Peace Convocation to be held in Jamaica in 2011. And once again, Australia's treatment of its Indigenous population could become under the glare of a world spotlight. In just a few moments, we'll meet members of the delegation to discuss their perceptions of the intervention. You're welcome to join us to ask questions or to offer observations on 1300 800 222, 1300 800 222. Ring now if you're in the Northern Territory or South Australia. For the rest of the country, I'll give you the phone number again a little later. In our second hour this evening, two thinkers on religion. First up, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of God, A Biography, Jack Miles. Jack will join us for the first of two discussions. Tonight, he offers his thoughts on politics, religion, and Barack Obama. Then we will be joined by Catholic theologian and openly gay priest James Allison to talk not so much about sexuality, but about ways of understanding theology. The federal intervention in Aboriginal communities is under international scrutiny this week as a delegation from the World Council of Churches talks with Indigenous communities about the impact of Canberra's policies. The visitors are part of what the World Council of Churches calls its Living Letters program. It's part of the lead-up to the International Ecumenical Peace Convocation to be held in 2011. Well, it's good to welcome into the studio the World Council of Churches team leader, Maria Chavez-Quispe, Graham Mundine, the local Indigenous coordinator for the visit, and the Reverend Seelan Garlett, Deputy Chair of the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Ecumenical Commission. And Seelan is also a minister in the Uniting Church of Australia. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Seelan, let me come to you first, Seelan. Why did NATSIEC invite the World Council of Churches to look at northern communities, particularly at the intervention? What were your concerns?
John, the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Ecumenical Commission approached the National Council of Churches of Australia and asked them to walk alongside in the endorsing of a letter to the World Council of Churches to have a team of Indigenous and non-Indigenous Christians have come as living letters. This approach was to, in a way, ask the Indigenous peoples of other lands who know what it's like to be marginalised, who know what it's like to feel injustice, and who would feel a connection to the struggle of the Aboriginal people of Australia. And rightly, we could have done it through the electronic communication. We could have had real emotional ties in doing that, but we feel that we needed a presence for them to walk on our ground, to walk upon our land, and to listen to the journeys of our people in the here and now.
So it was important to get that face-to-face communication, that real physical contact for you.
Yes, John, this was very important for us.
What were the concerns you had that you wanted a delegation of fellow Indigenous people to look at?
John, time and time again, we've been linked as a national body, as a national church, and a lot of our people are in these communities, and we've been hearing time and time again of promises that seem to have been broken. We thought that this was going to be another of raising the bar that's going to, Aboriginal people are going to encounter many good things to come. But we've been hearing often of the hurt and the struggle, and it seems to be like a pinning against the wall. And thus, we needed to have voices, and we need to have people to be able to come and stand alongside of us to hear these.
Were these things related particularly to the intervention?
Yes, John, these were related particularly to the intervention. And thus it sort of, when people kept coming back time and time again in discussions and feeling that this was more of a burden, has become more oppressed, then thus we needed to be able to allow our voices to be heard and aired on not only a national but an international scene.
Maria Chavez-Quispe, as a representative for this Living Letters World Council of Churches program, I guess as one of the Living Letters yourself, before we get into the details of what you found on your visit, what sort of report are you to produce? That is, from your end, how do your findings come together? Do you write a report? Does it go somewhere else, like to a World Council of Churches body? And how will this visit fit into the wider event in Jamaica next year?
Yeah, John, thank you very much for welcoming us here in this studio and in your program. Thank you very much for letting us be here. And I want to express also on behalf of the team our greetings to all your audience. And regarding the report, yes, we are going to produce a report which basically will follow a methodology of identifying the problems, naming them, and we will try to engage the churches and the society. Our task is to bring the voices of the people that we have met during this time. And we want to be very responsible with this voice, and I'm sure we will talk more about this during this program. And I want also to respond the second part of your question, which is about the WCC and the decade to overcome the violence and the International Ecumenical Peace Convocation. I want you to know that the International Peace Convocation is the event which WCC will use to close a decade in which we were working to overcome the violence. So this Living Letters team will report to the IPC convocation and will report to the decade to overcome the violence, which means that all the churches of the Fellowship of Churches that WCC is will be engaged to respond in a concrete and adequate way to this witness that the Living Letters are bringing.
Will this be a public meeting in Jamaica next year? That is, will all delegates be coming together from all over the world and these findings will be discussed and displayed at this convocation?
Yeah, the convocation will be a space to celebrate the resilience of the people who is facing suffering. Will be a moment to concentrate and to focus in four themes that the convocatory is envisioning. For instance, peace in the community, peace with the earth, peace in the marketplace, and peace among the peoples. We think that the experience of the living leaders will bring so much resource for these four themes. Yes.
Graham Mundine, let me bring you in here. The phrase to describe the visit, living letters, it's one that I guess for people who've grown up in Christian communities, they'd understand it as an echo of St. Paul in the New Testament as he travelled round from community to community, visiting those communities and writing to them after his visit about his experience. Is that where you've drawn this analogy from?
Well, we haven't. It's a program of the World Council of Churches. But to say that it is very important, as Ceylon has pointed out, about having a physical presence within the community. It's easy for us who are in other parts of Australia to sit back and speak out about these issues, but to go and actually listen to and hear the people themselves expressing what their experience is of, in this case, the intervention, is quite powerful. And for us, it really has affected who we are as a group and has also driven us to try and do something about it.
Well, you've helped coordinate the on-the-ground aspects of the visit. What stood out to you as the delegation moved from community to community? I mean, were there any things that surprised you?
It's always, first of all, I should say it was very heartening to see the resilience of the people. The people themselves who have expressed to us that they are being oppressed still have strength within each and every one of them to continue to fight against these things that are happening to them.
Was that sense of oppression directly linked to the intervention?
Yes. That they found that the intervention itself was disempowering. It wasn't empowering the people to grow as people, but to take their responsibilities away from them. For instance, here in the Northern Territory, we have this new shire arrangement where before the communities themselves used to run their own local councils. But now a group from outside makes all the decisions about what should be done in those communities. And therefore, they are not sure what's going on in all this, which is quite debilitating and disempowering to them.
Were there any unexpected things as far as you're concerned?
For me, being a local, I don't think there wasn't anything that really was unexpected. But one thing that I would express is it was emphasised very strongly the things that I have heard and read about and listened to in not only ourselves as churches, but also the many other groups who are out there trying to steer the government in the right direction of working with Indigenous peoples.
Ceylon Garlett, what did you want to come out of the visit?
My wanting to come out of the visit was that the people said to us, are you going to be another group that's going to fly into our community? Are you going to be another group that's going to come and talk to us and then go away and leave us to battle on our own? Time and time again, we've heard the voices of old people. We've heard the voices of them emphasizing the need for making it right for their children. And from our being, from our listening, we have said to them that their voice and our voice are going to be made known. We assured them that whatever we are able to do, whatever noise and people that we are able to make contact with, we will do it.
So you're keen for the wider world to hear about this, and those concerns are sufficient for you to say, look, the wider world does need to know about this because conditions are still intolerable.
John, one of the things that we wanted to do is tell the people that we want to stand in solidarity with them. We wanted to tell them and that we want to make a commitment to them that we will speak out, we will tell our world, we will tell our community what we have seen and what we have heard. And we strongly encourage the churches of Australia and the World Council of Churches are wanting to commit to this journey that we want to give. And if this goes overseas and gets credible support and been able to walk alongside of the Indigenous people of Australia to right the wrongs, then I believe we're taking a step in the right direction.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. We're talking about the intervention in the Northern Territory. In particular, we're discussing a visit by a delegation of the World Council of Churches to the Northern Territory this week, looking at those communities, Aboriginal communities, Indigenous communities, who are working under the intervention, an act which some describe as a breach of human rights because it has removed aspects of the Racial Discrimination Act in order for certain remedies to be imposed, developed. We'll leave the adjectives to others, on Indigenous communities in the Northern Territory. There are prospects of it being extended to other communities outside of Indigenous communities to avoid aspects of the Racial Discrimination Act. We're going to talk about some of those things in a few moments' time. But what do you think of the idea of Australia's intervention being exposed on the world stage? Does Australia have anything to be ashamed of? Should we be pleased that a delegation from the World Council of Churches has arrived to look at the intervention and just assess it for presentation at an international convocation to be held next year? We'll take some calls in a moment. Just before we do, I'd like to speak again to Maria Chavez Quispe, who is the coordinator of the international aspect of this delegation. Maria, did you find things on this visit that shocked or disturbed you?
Yes, I can tell you, John, that as a delegation, we all have witnessed the specific situations of the Indigenous peoples here, and we want to raise our awareness in the churches and in the society. And I can say you that so many things were very shocking. I am coming from Bolivia, and in Bolivia we live a very hard situation for Indigenous peoples, and we are trying to change the situation from our own perspective. But when we look at the history of Australia, when we look to what Australia is saying to the world, you cannot really believe what's happening here.
So you think it is far worse than you imagined from that point of view?
Yes, for sure, yes.
What specifically, did anything strike you deeply shocking? One could talk about, for example, the level of health. One could talk about the legal imposition of the intervention. One could talk about alcohol abuse. There are a number of things we could talk about. Sexual abuse. All of those fit into a range of activities. The government have said, the federal government, that the intervention, suspension of certain aspects of the Racial Discrimination Act and other things are necessary so that these difficulties can be dealt with. What's your perception of that for a start? That is the intervention itself and the removal of certain aspects of the Racial Discrimination Act.
Yeah, you are asking for a very complex answer. So what I would tell you is that I am wondering how can this government can answer with a problem when they are
Answer one problem with another problem.
Exactly. For me, that's the point in this case. Mm-hmm. And as we, as Indigenous people, we have faced so many kinds of imposition in our histories, we can suspect and we can feel the suffering of our peoples here, and we can see that there is a kind of political of imposition, and again, trying to conquest and oppress so much the indigenous peoples who are already oppressed and suffering. So I think it responds to a project which is just trying to take out once again what they already take out from these people.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio. Time to take your calls. 1-300-800-222. Do give us a ring. 1-300-800-222. On Sunday night, we're talking to a World Council of Churches delegation that's visiting Australia to have a look at the Northern Territory intervention. And the leader of the delegation is Maria Chavez Quispe from Bolivia. Also in the studio, Graham Mundine, a local coordinator, and the Reverend Celan Garlett, Deputy Chair of the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Ecumenical Commission and also a minister in the Uniting Church. Time to take a call or two. Marlene in Alice Springs wants to make a comment or ask a question. Hello, Marlene. How are you?
Good, thanks, John. I just wanted to clarify what you're saying about the Racial Discrimination Act.
Yes.
It wasn't aspects of the Act that was set aside. It was the whole of the Racial Discrimination Act 1975 and the Northern Territory Anti-Discrimination Act. And it wasn't just so that income management could be imposed on Aboriginal people. It was also imposition of five-year leases over the 73 prescribed areas and the town camps. It was taking over of property, taking over control of communities, and in that way disempowering people and adding to the increase in racial discrimination.
So, Marlene, in general, I take it you're opposed to the way in which this action has taken place. Do you see any meritorious side to it at all?
The only positive thing that's come out of it is that the government's recognised that there needs to be a huge injection of money, but continually throwing money at a problem doesn't actually fix it. The people on the ground need to be involved in finding the solutions to problems in their communities. The intervention was actually introduced on the premise of a lie. There has not been the huge numbers of child abuse cases, there were no pedophile rings. The story goes on. We're 3 years down the track. As the team said, people are surviving this, but it's having a very debilitating effect, both physically and spiritually.
Marlene, thanks for your observations. I don't know if there's a question you wanted to put to the delegation at all.
No, I met them briefly in Alice Springs. It was great that they came, and I'm sorry about the weather in Central Australia.
Graham Mundine, do you have a response to what Marlene said?
I think she's absolutely right. I think Australians as a whole should be outraged at the way that we have treated the people of the Northern Territory. Yes, the racial discrimination amendments which have happened recently may extend throughout the territory to all those on welfare, for instance. But remember, in the Northern Territory, most of the people in the Northern Territory who are on welfare are Indigenous peoples. And of course, when we stretch this further, as the Act will, into the other parts of the other states of the country, the designated areas will also be, I'm sure, those areas which have a large population of Indigenous Australians.
Yes, well, it could also be. One would be, it'd be interesting, wouldn't it, just being a bit cheeky, to see how people would feel if it were a designated area were to become the western suburbs of Sydney or Melbourne.
That's true. Yeah. And as I've often said to groups in my talks around the country, is that governments seem to experiment on the Aboriginal people and then try and roll it out for the rest of Australia. And therefore it snuck in these policies. But in the meanwhile, we're the ones that take the brunt of these changes to the way that we deal with those who really do need our support.
Silangala, just responding to some of the things Marlene observed, what about those who have said that the intervention itself has had some beneficial side to it? That is, some communities have benefited from the increased attention on health, the increased control of alcohol and other substances, those sorts of things.
John, I want to affirm all of what Marlene was able to share. And yes, there has been some positive aspects in regard to some of the issues and some of the ways that were taking place. But they were far and few between. If we could probably have on one hand some of the good sides that people had about the intervention and about how good it's been. And for me, I think what it was based on, it actually brought attention a lot of people in Australia, in our nation, when Mr. Howard got up and said about the cruelty, about the hurt that the children were feeling and facing daily. And for me as an Indigenous man, this made my tenors become alerted to this fact. But when the statistics and the numbers were put together, they had no weight whatsoever. Mm. So I've found this, and I agree with Marlene, that the invention was based upon a lie. And yes, there have been, John, far and few between the good points of the intervention that people have shared with us.
And the big lie here was about the paedophilia and the paedophile rings. Is that what you're referring to?
That's correct. That's what I'm referring to, yes.
Let's go to Jules in Birrawong country. Hello, Jules. Welcome. What would you like to say?
Well, thank you for this subject. I've been angry about this for a long time. I'm a white Australian, and they've got no right to lock all the people of the Aboriginal communities into one big load. Well, a lady talked years ago, a few months ago, on one of your shows, and she said she's an educated woman, she earns a living, and they take half her salary off her too, her income. And it just didn't make sense. The people who are not causing a lot of problems are just treated as simpletons, are just treated as fools. And that's what it's about, because we can't understand many of the culture of the Aboriginal people. Can't be bothered, and it's easier for us to clump it into one thing, and I find it just so insulting. And I just think something, and I'm glad the United Nations, the overseas people are coming in on this.
Well, it's the World Council of Churches, yes, actually, and they're going to have a big international convention next year, which many of these issues are aired. Do you think that's a good thing?
Oh, I think it's fantastic.
Washing our dirty linen in public for us?
Yes, absolutely. Well, why hide it? You know, I mean, it's time for us to talk about our ups and downs and our mental health and all that, rather than hide it all the time. And a few people have put on a performance about being important, which is the white people in this country. Other people have to run around and hide, be intimidated. Well, hello, I've met an awful lot of people from white communities. I've got an adoption background, and many people have lots of different backgrounds. So why is anybody any different? I just can't wait to see it turned inside out. And it's time for us to recognise Aboriginal culture. It's time for it to be taught in schools from prep to year 12 so we can assimilate and understand and stop this business. How many priests that go in and have pedophiles go into jail for more than... And if they do go at all? I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, I just find it... I'm a Catholic from way back, and I believe our Catholic... take my Catholic Catholicism, I call it Catholicism, with me whatever I do, because it's ingrained. But who am I to say I'm any better than anyone else? And that's one of the things that I didn't like about religion, that we're sort of a little bit more conceited than we need to be.
Well, Jules, thanks for your call. Good to have you with us. You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio. If you'd like to call us, it's about the intervention and an international delegation from the World Council of Churches visiting Australia at the moment to check on just what we've been doing in the Northern Territory with the suspension of the Racial Discrimination Act and other things. And do you think this should become a matter of international public concern? Let's go to Barry in Mount Isa. Hello, Barry. Welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What would you like to say?
Well, basically, my concern with the intervention and the possible extension of it to other areas and other people in the community, whether you think it's appropriate or not, or whether you even think if it's necessary or not, I think if it has to be implemented, it should be implemented on a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. I know that might seem a bit cumbersome, but I mean, there are some people in the community, whether they're Indigenous or not Indigenous, and I'm not Indigenous. I'm on a pension. I'm on a disability support pension. I suffer from a mental illness. I cope reasonably well. I'm on a significant amount of medication. And I manage to pay all my bills and function okay. And I don't think I'd like to be told what to do and how to spend my pension and to be regulated in any way. And I just think that if things have to be implemented, then it should be on a case-by-case basis.
Yes, it's too much of a blanket imposition. Graham Mundine, let's get your view on that, because this is one of the things that has been spoken about publicly, hasn't it? The fact that some communities are not like every other community.
That's true. It's better to try and picture Aboriginal Australia as Europe, many, many different countries, and of course they have different ways of dealing with and working with and cooperating to get solutions within those communities. But the intervention has come in, a blanket has come over the whole of the Northern Territory. Several different tribal groups, language groups are involved in all this, and they all think, or they're treated as if they're all the same. Well, in actual fact, they're not. They're very different situations and different hopes, dreams and desires in each of those communities. And therefore, the government should be dealing, I know, as you said, it's going to be a bit more difficult, but surely in those places we can work with people in their local scene and trying to understand. I think there is already been in place a framework that could work in these places, but it just needs to be twinked.
Tweaked. I think it was said before.
Thank you. To be able to make it work properly for each individual group. We can't say the people of the desert are the same as the people from Gilawinku or whatever.
Any more than you could say one community where there is a pub in close proximity is the same as a community where there's not a pub for 300 or 400 K.
That's true. Yeah. And also, just while you're on about pubs and so on, just about the inequality that's happening within these communities. For a lot of these communities, they have been dry areas for a long, long time. And yet, the government has come in and put these giant big signs out the front, which depicts them as drunken areas or areas of pornography. These things aren't true about these communities. But I can also say that it's very easy for a non-Indigenous person to actually get a permit to be able to bring alcohol into these communities. And that's the inequality of it all.
Is there a feeling, and I don't want to go too far here, but when you say that, the government have put up signs out as people go into communities saying sort of pornography area or alcohol or whatever, is there a feeling generated of stigmatisation? That is, the people themselves feel that they are being stigmatised.
That's true. Janini Gondara, the Reverend Janini Gondara from Elko Island, has been forthright in saying, listen, these signs are here, but we're not like that. Mm. Yet the picture we see, especially down south and in other areas, is that we're painted as all drunks and we're all sitting around watching pornography all day, and that is a lie.
Let's go to Daniel in Sydney, who has a question or two. Hello, Daniel. Welcome.
Yeah, g'day, guys. How are you all going? Look, I was wondering before, I noticed, John, you asked a few times what part of the intervention specifically is causing big problems. And let me just maybe start by saying that I think any program which takes away people's right to choose how to live their life is abhorrent. But I mean, I'm an Australian, and I must believe that our government is putting things in place with the right intentions. There are obviously problems, and they're obviously trying to fix them. So are there parts of the intervention specifically causing problems, and are there parts of it which are helping?
Seelan, do you want to have a first attempt at that?
John, I'm happy to do that. I think the problem that's been caused in regard to the intervention is the sadness that the government had said, we know what's best for the Aboriginal community. To the leaders of the community, men and women, who by far have tremendous leadership, were not consulted. And this has been the heart and the hurt of the Aboriginal people as we've been able to go around. Men and women with valour, men and women with strong spirits about their land and their connection and their belonging. This has been the hurt that they again have been left out. It's again of a big brother type attitude to the communities, and the people feel so alienated to where they belong.
So there's that point about alienation, and that's a principle underlying the whole thing. What about the specifics? Graham, are there any specifics that you could go to for Daniel?
I think you're the person who's just rung in now.
Daniel.
Daniel is right in to say we should have confidence in our governments to do this, to respond appropriately. The problem is that you've got a lot of non-Indigenous people responding to, instead of listening to and encouraging Indigenous people, or listening to and trying to solve their problems.
So rather than being there to serve and help, they're there to command and control.
Yes, and even I know here in the, I'm in Darwin at the moment, you know, in the paper today, the new minister for employment, I think it was reported off, what we need is to tell these Aboriginals to get out of bed. Now, that's not very helpful. Mm. And also is a stereotype.
Yes. So John, it's an attitudinal thing. Maria?
I think also we need to see the other side. As citizens, we can trust in our government. We need to trust also, because every time we are going to vote them and we try to elect them with our good conscience about that. But in the case of the intervention, we can see also that this policy of the intervention is not respecting fundamental human rights of the people.
Yes.
No. So we are.
So the starting point is
wrong. We are facing now a violation of the human rights of the people, especially targeting one specific group. And it is very, very hard to understand why this is happening and why the wider society is not saying anything against this. And then as the special reporter on Indigenous Peoples' Rights has pointed, because he has visited also this territory, it's a violation of the international rules, even the rules that Australia internationally is supporting, no? So it's a contradiction of the state. While it's affirming human rights in the international level, it's violating that human rights of their citizenship. So that's what it's so hard to understand, and I think as responsible citizens, Australians, you do need to denounce this.
The argument, Maria, has been, and I'm sure you've heard this argument, the argument has been, look, the conditions were so bad that something was needed to be done. So you've got to weigh a greater violation against a lesser violation. And the greater violation was seen to be those things which were being done in the immediate context, rather than the lesser violation, which was a temporary suspension of the Racial Discrimination Act.
Yes, and let me say something from the experience that we got this week. The analysis of the problem is not a real analysis of the problem. We think that the government has used one specific point to address so many things.
This is the pedophilia allegation.
Yeah, as Silan has pointed very well, they have taken the case of pedophilia, but they have never proved this. Actually, in that specific point, we have, again, problems, because they have violated the rights of the children, sending doctors to make reports, and they have found just four children who could have suffered of this. But they have checked more than 7,000 cases. So if you go to these children, you will see that they have been damaged, not by the pedophilians, but by the doctors and this system. So, and in that sense, I can tell you that there are so many possibilities of analysis of this situation, and I don't think the government would be able to answer to all the questions that we can raise.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. We're looking at the intervention in the Northern Territory, the suspension of the Racial Discrimination Act and other things, in the light of a visit from the World Council of Churches. A visit looking at the suspension of the Act and other aspects of the intervention in the light of a proposed convocation to be held in Jamaica next year. Look at these problems around the world as suffered by Indigenous communities. Will Australia once again be under an international spotlight for its dealing with Indigenous issues? Chris in Canberra is on the line. Chris, hello, welcome.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Look, I must say I'm stunned that this conversation's happening, but delighted at the same time, because I'm a journalist based in Canberra, but I've spent a lot of time in the Territory of late, and the last few years reporting primarily on the effects of the Northern Territory intervention. And I don't think people really realise how bad it is. And
how bad the intervention is.
Well, yeah, and what it's actually done. And this is, you know, the statistics I'm about to give you come directly from the federal government's own evaluation of the intervention, which was done last year and updated this year. But alcohol offences are up. School attendance has dropped. They've spent nearly close to $200 million now on housing, and they've built less than a dozen homes on the ground for Aboriginal people. Health professionals reported widespread starvation when the intervention was announced, and the Sunrise Health Service reported that anemia rates went through the roof because people couldn't access their welfare entitlements, so they couldn't buy food. The Minister, Jenny Macklin, has claimed that fresh food anecdotally has increased, or the consumption of, but a School of Menzies Health Research report released only a few months ago showed that in fact the opposite had occurred. Junk food had increased. Self-harm incidents almost doubled in the year after the intervention was launched. The number of deaths went from 10 reported deaths to over 80 the year after the intervention was launched, and the cost to the Australian taxpayer has been well over $1 billion. And one of your people was talking just then about the number of so-called, well, pedophiles that have been caught. It hasn't increased at all year on year on year. And in fact, of about 8,000 health checks that they did in the opening months of the Northern Territory intervention, they had less than 36 referrals, and primarily for neglect. There were no great vast swathes of pedophile rings uncovered at all. In fact, the Australian Crime Commission was given $8 million and unprecedented coercive powers, and has told Parliament now on three occasions that there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever to substantiate the claims of widespread pedophilia.
Chris, as a journalist, why do you think this is not front page in the mainstream media? Why aren't Fairfax and News Limited running this as a major story?
Well, look, Fairfax has been reasonable. Well, I shouldn't say reasonable. They've, in the early days, The Age, for example, called this what it was. They called it the Black Tamper. The Australian newspaper has supported the intervention and invested a lot in supporting the intervention, so they're, I think, a bit reticent to now point out its major flaws. Although that said, they have exposed a lot of government failure on the expenditure of housing monies. But this stuff just doesn't rate. I've been writing about Indigenous affairs now for 10 years, and it just doesn't rate. It rates, and it rated off the charts when John Howard said they were bringing the troops into the Northern Territory, and that they were going to, it was going to cost some tens of millions of dollars. Well over $1 billion later, it's not rating anymore, because the talk of child sexual abuse has not come true. There's nothing really to report other than widespread government failure and the cause of further harm to Aboriginal people. Now, that's not a particularly good news story. Certainly not as good as let's send the troops in.
Yes.
It's. I don't think anybody, any of your guests tonight, or most 99% of Aboriginal people in the Northern Territory, would not agree with the statement that it has caused a great deal more harm, that they are demonstrably worse off today than they were on June 20, 2007.
Chris, is the material that you've got there and got access to and are clearly writing about in the publications you have
freely
access
available.
To, it's freely available. I guess I have to ask Maria Chavez-Kithbe, is if this material is making its way to your delegation, that is, are you taking advantage of government reports and other things such as that those Chris is talking about, Maria?
Probably better that I answer.
Yes,
that,
okay, Graham.
That's all right. Yeah. The group, when they arrived here on last weekend, were given a briefing in the morning. It's very difficult. Like, I mean, you're talking about these documents are quite in a lot. There are many documents
there
and
are.
Quite thick.
And you can drown in them. Yes,
you can. And yeah. Therefore, they are given an overview of. An overview of what's happening, but again, it's an overview in the sense of their job is to go and listen in these communities to hear the voice of the people. So we give them information about what they can see, some of the problems that have come up that the churches themselves have spoken about, but we didn't want to taint in any way what they were going to see and what they were going to hear. And therefore the local communities themselves were allowed then to speak directly to these people and to tell them the way that they viewed this intervention.
I guess I have to ask then, is there an avenue for the sorts of things Chris is talking about to be made available to the wider WCC in its preparation for the convocation? I guess that's
sure.
The question.
Sure. As a National Council of Churches, this information comes across my desk. Our people look at this information and give us briefings on this information. But again, we feed, of course, heads of churches and church groups themselves an abbreviated sense form of these documents so that they can look at them.
And
yes,
Chris,
John,
Maria.
I'm sorry, but the idea to send living letters is specifically to witness what's happening in the local context, because do we have so much information? Do we have the reports that are issued in the international fora as well as in the national context? But what we want is to have people reporting what they have seen and they have listened, and I think we have this, and it can make more relevant the reports that are coming from other spaces.
Maria, thank you. We're almost out of time. Chris, thanks for your call. Ceylan, you got any final observations, just briefly?
John, I'm going to thank Chris for those things you've given us. And one of the things that we didn't want to do in this journey is to be able to know everything, know all the numbers, all the statistics before we went into the community. We wanted to go there to listen. We wanted to go there not telling them what's taken place, but to be able to listen to what they have to say to us.
Maria Chavez-Kithbe, Graham Mundine and Ceylan Garrett, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Night.
Thanks, John.
Thank you very much.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.